It's another hour of the most listened to radio program on the Northern Plains. Oh, look at that CNN headline. Doesn't that surprise you? You ready, Kev? Florida shatters U.S. record for most new cases in a single day. They just love it. They should change. You know, CNN, I used to think it was Cable News Network. I think it's Corona News Network as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a COVID
News Network.
News Network, yeah. Yeah. They just can't. They can't. I mean, the equivalent is that they should put up, you know, every time there's a car crash, they should have an update somewhere in the U.S. about a heart attack, right? Because we can prevent heart attacks.
Oh, terminal cancer diagnosis.
Right, yeah. I mean, I need all those numbers. So just depress the living daylights out of me, why don't you? Yeah. Keep coming. One thing they did not do is tell you how many people have recovered. North Dakota keeps that number. Florida does not. I don't know why, but that's a number to keep in mind as well. And obviously, hospitalizations are an issue as well, and the hospitals are, they say, bursting at the seams. The one thing also in this new wave of media frenzy covering coronavirus that seems to be missing is the average age of the COVID patient has come down considerably. I think it's in the 40s now, nationwide as an average, and the recovery rate, therefore, is much higher. So you'll see the hospitalization spike, but they leave the hospital. And the death rate is lower and lower and lower as well. So in other words, what does that mean, the death rate? Well, it means forget about coronavirus, just the regular flu. The regular flu is out there, and you got the flu. People die every year from the flu. They do. That happens.
Oh,
You'd say, okay, what's the death rate? In other words, if I get it, what are my chances of getting it? It is getting down there to the point where the death rate is, you know, within spitting distance of the regular flu with coronavirus. So it is gotten lower and lower and lower and lower with this. So that's just there's risk in everything, but you got to do a risk reward. Balance that out and see where it's at. So anyway, don't turn on the Coronavirus News Network, CNN, unless you really, really, really want to be depressed. And I guarantee you, the banners are going to change on Election Day. All this will go away. It'll be much reduced. It'll be less of a threat. So just keep that in mind. There's a little bit of an agenda at work as well. Doing what we can to keep you informed with all the facts here, folks. Drew Wrigley will join us at the bottom of the hour. Drew is the U.S. Attorney for North Dakota. Essentially would be the judiciary, the U.S. Justice Department rep, highest federal law enforcement official in the state of North Dakota. They charged last week Eric Stephen Toa. He was one of the instigators in the riot that happened on May 30th in Fargo. We're going to talk with him about the federal charges for law enforcement. So look forward to that. And as I mentioned last hour in great detail, that I was excited today to talk about a project that makes me happy. And we need one of those stories that make us happy now and then. We need something to look forward to. And to have one of 19 presidential libraries anywhere in the world like this, here in North Dakota, here in a park, only one of its kind, in a park named for the same person, Presidential Library, is pretty exciting. The CEO of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library is Ed O'Keefe, joins us now to talk a little bit about this today on the program. Ed, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excellent. Good to talk with you, Scott.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this project. First of all, just give us the update. Where are things at?
Well, Scott, as you said, this is good news. You know, the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library is an economic stimulus for North Dakota, and man, could we use it right about now. We want to put, at the end of the day, about $250 million of private money into the North Dakota economy, and I'm very pleased to report to you that we are well on our way toward raising the initial $100 million in private philanthropy to tap into the state legislature-approved North Dakota endowment. We will make that public announcement, and we will achieve that goal before the legislature comes back into session in 2021. So, you know, this is just a tremendously exciting time because despite all of the uncertainty, despite all of the headwinds to our economy at the moment, people are responding to this project. You know, they believe deeply in it. Just as you said, Scott, you know, to be one of half of, you know, one of less than two dozen presidential libraries in the entire nation, in the entire world, and to have it in North Dakota alongside Theodore Roosevelt National Park, the only presidential library alongside a national park, the only national park alongside a presidential library, is just a tremendous honor, and we're going to achieve it, and it's going to put jobs, it's going to put construction, it's going to diversify the economy, and it's going to be something that we can all look to as a real beacon for the state of North Dakota and the region for generations to come.
Now, this presidential library could be anywhere. We're blessed that it's going to be in North Dakota, as you say, alongside the Theodore Roosevelt National Park. So what a great combo there. But, you know, if there is a controversial part of this project, it is a state expenditure to be part of it. As I've explained countless times, if, you know, people are giving money, they want to see that there's some commitment on the part of the people they are giving it to. And so that was the premise behind the request of $50 million that then would leverage, you know, $100 million to come up with $150 million, which is, I think, genius. But explain how that came, Ed, because you mentioned North Dakota Endowment, and I think some people think that somebody's writing a check for $50 million. Explain the state role, the legacy fund role in this.
Yeah, Scott, I'm really happy that you asked that question because, look, given all the headwinds in North Dakota right now in the oil markets, in the result of the recession related to COVID and the closures, I am as sensitive as any North Dakotan to the idea that we need to be very wise about where we spend our money. And this particular endowment stays with the state. I like to think of it this way. It's like North Dakota has a bank account. In fact, they are the only state with, as you know, with a state bank. And that state bank is going to hold the $50 million forever. That $50 million never comes to the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library directly. What we will get is the proceeds of the investment. Think of it like the interest off of the investment of the $50 million. It's the same system that's in place to fund the education funds around the state. It's the same system that they use to fund a lot of arts and education programs. The state never transfers that money to the TR library. The state keeps the money. They give the proceeds of the investment to the TR library for operations and maintenance moving forward. It basically, I think of it as, at this stage, a 2-to-1 match on the private donation side, right? We need to raise $100 million for the state to set aside 50 and give us the proceeds of the investment in order to maintain operations. But we're going to raise more than $100 million. Again, I think at the end of the day, this is going to be more like a 3-to-1 match or a 4-to-1 match because there's the presidential library itself, which is going to, of course, be an attraction for generations to come. It'll diversify the economy. It'll mean hundreds of millions of dollars in construction and related jobs over the course of actually building the library. But we haven't even begun to talk about the programming. I mean, with a presidential library comes an extraordinary bevy of programming. That's going to be working with the North Dakota education system. That's going to be working with the universities and colleges, with the state education system. There are going to be all kinds of programs and investment outside of the cost of the construction itself. But if you really want to simplify the thinking about the endowment, number one, North Dakota never gives up the $50 million. They hold it and simply give us the result of the investment. And two, you are looking at least a 2-to-1 private-to-state match, which, again, at the end of the day, is going to be more like 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 over time.
And, again, the promise was, hey, if there's $50 million set aside, we're going to leverage that 2-to-1. So that's another reason for the investment because it makes the actual facility happen. And am I right that there was interest in doing this in New York and other places? Ed?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Theodore Roosevelt is one of the most popular presidents of all time. I mean, there is, of course, Sagamore Hill, his personal home in Oyster Bay, New York. There was an effort in 2008 to build a presidential library in Oyster Bay in New York. The presidential library system really started with FDR, and then Herbert Hoover, while he was still alive, created his presidential library next to his home in West Branch, Iowa. But this has been a thought since the moment TR died. I mean, TR died unexpectedly on January 6, 1919, and about 22 minutes later, the idea for a presidential library occurred to those who wanted to build a legacy to him and to learn the lessons of his life. I mean, think of citizenship, leadership, and conservation. I mean, this is the person who expanded the national park to 219 million acres of land while he was in office alone in 7.5 years. This is someone who is still looked to as one of the greatest leaders of our country. I mean, and somebody who defined American citizenship at the turn of the century and really made the 20th century the American century. So there's a lot of competition for this library. The fact that it's going to be in North Dakota, one of only 13, and once Obama's has finished, 14 in existence, that's a big honor.
Unbelievable. Pretty amazing. We'll talk more about this with Ed O'Keefe when we come back, a little bit about what the plans are for the look of the library, what'll be in it when we continue, so don't go away.
I'm getting out of this high-rise penthouse suite where we pretend life rosy and sweet. I'm going back to the folks that I used to know.
Biggest question of the day is what's for lunch, right? What's for lunch? Where do I go? PetroServe USA. What's for lunch today is Tater Tot Hot Dish, both at the Harwood location and the West Main Avenue West Fargo location. Salisbury Steak, Fargo 12th Avenue North location. Valley City Beef Tips and Gravy and Scalloped Potatoes and Ham. And remember, they all come with two sides and a bun. That's a lunch special at PetroServe USA. And, of course, each and every PetroServe USA location has different specials, but all of them have the 4 for $4. Where you get the single-topping personal pan pizza or breakfast pizza, 2 fresh-baked cookies, and a 20-ounce fountain pop. 4 items, $4 all day, every day at PetroServe USA. Remember, Valley Dairy Store is part of the PetroServe USA family. The best caramel rolls ever. They are really, really good. And they run out. They're so good. So you want to go there early rather than later to get your caramel rolls from the Valley Dairy Stores. They're now in all PetroServe USA stores, too. So there you go. Back with more of our conversation with Ed O'Keefe, who's the CEO of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. Ed is a North Dakota native that has done all kinds of wonderful things across the globe, including working for some of the bigger news organizations, now coming back to head up this project, which is exciting. And it's been a new Ed in my Grand Forks days and his family, and ran some very fine McDonald's, I might say. Over the years, there's only a couple of O'Keefes left in the McDonald's world, right? Your Uncle Mike, is that it?
That's right. My Uncle Mike, my Aunt Cindy, the last one standing in the O'Keefe family in the McDonald's business. My Uncle Tim, my father Bill, my mother Heather just recently sold their stores in Grand Forks. You got me thinking about lunch here, Scott. We're talking.
I know. Exactly right. Big Macs
for the next 30 minutes.
PetroServe, yes, the whole deal. And and of course, John O'Keefe, your grandfather, was, you know, a personal friend of Ray Kroc's, and to have the McDonald's legacy start here in North Dakota with that, pretty cool. So a great history there. And now you got some new history to make with the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. Walk me through what this looks like and how you decide what it looks like. You have a contest going among architects right now. How does that work?
That's right. Well, that's another really unique part of this TR Library project for North Dakota. We have a design competition with 3 of the world's most renowned architects. Right now, Studio Gang, which is headed by Jeannie Gang out of Chicago, Hennig Larson, which has offices across the United States, but was actually a company that was founded in Copenhagen, Denmark, and we have Snohetta, which will be a familiar name to a lot of Norwegians across the state. This is a company, again, that has offices across all of the United States, but was founded in Oslo, Norway, and did a lot of the Norwegian National Park work, and have a really, really strong history of working in climates like we have in North Dakota. All 3 of them have been to Medora. They have met with the community. They have listened to the ranchers. They have talked with the townspeople. They have heard the vision of what we want to create, and they are coming back with us, coming back to us with designs. They are going to be made public on August 10th. So in the next month, what has been, I think, a real, you know, an idea. You keep hearing about the TR Library. What is the TR Library? The state legislature has done this. You're actually going to see on August 10th 3 different visions for what the TR Library can be. And then the TR Library Board is going to be in Medora holding public meetings. We are going to have a community barbecue, and quite literally, all are welcome. Anyone who has a thought or a consideration, wants to hear from the architects directly, wants to see the designs in person, we're going to have all 3 of them there, and we're going to have a community barbecue so everyone can have their say. And we are going to make an announcement of which design we have selected on September 18th. So there's basically there's a month of hopefully conversation on your show, conversation across the state, real thoughts about where we should take the direction and design of the TR library. We make the selection, and that's not the end of the process. That is the beginning of the process. Then the selected architect who wins the commission for only the 15th presidential library in the nation or the world will get to work and really begin to meet with the community. They'll be out in North Dakota. They'll be out with the design. They'll be talking to people about the distributed experience. And really, I think this begins to open up a whole new gateway to the West. Right, I mean, people right now, if they go to Medora, they go for the musical, they go for the Pitchfork Fondue, they go for the national park. They might spend a day or two or three, camp out, and be with their family for a short period of time. We want people to stay there for 5 days, for a week, for 10 days, and to use Medora as the entranceway of an entire new experience in the West. To go down and spend a day in Deadwood, to go see Mount Rushmore, but to make their base of operations Medora and North Dakota, and to drive people who are going to Yellowstone through North Dakota first. But, you know, again, this is just the beginning of a very exciting process that will involve a lot of input from the public, a lot of input from the community, a lot of thoughts from the ranchers and people across the state.
And for people that actually, once they get inside the walls of what you've just described, you know, I've said before that I hate the word presidential library because it just makes it sound so small, like, you know, check out a book. Whereas unless you've been to one of the 14 others, you don't understand it's much more than a quote-unquote library. What will the experience be like at this facility?
Yeah, well, you don't wait 100 years after the president's death to do something traditional. And I don't think the TR especially would have wanted a staid, quiet, traditional experience. We are going to try to turn the concept of a presidential library inside out. Like, quite literally, we'll be the only presidential library that, when you come, the objective is to get you out into Theodore Roosevelt National Park. We want to be the only library that you can ride a horse to. Right, you can hitch up the horse next to the library and go on in and have an experience. You can walk, you can bike, you can hike. Right, we're going to try to connect the experience of TR National Park with the TR Library and make this an experience like no other. Once you get inside, again, the emphasis is on your story. Right, most presidential libraries are designed to tell the first draft of history from that particular president's perspective. That's not what we're aiming to do here. TR's legacy is well enshrined. We want you to be able to learn from, not just about TR, right? We're not going to have artifacts under glass that you're going to go and look at. We're going to create an experience that you can feel. I mean, we like to say that if you know, most presidential libraries, dad drags the kids, the best thing that could happen at the TR library is the kids drag dad, right? We want people to enjoy coming here and to learn from the experience of doing something in action, right? To walk out with a sense of wonder and respect for the healing power of nature, but also to understand that, hey, whatever your political perspective, whatever you happen to believe, you got to be the change you want to see in the world, right? Be in the arena. That was TR's basic message, right? It's not the critic that counts. It's not the person who stumbles, right, fails. It is the person who is in the arena fighting for what they believe in. And we want people to come out of this experience of a presidential library feeling like they are empowered to act in the world.
Boy, I tell you, that just gets me excited for one of, right now, 14. This will be the 15th like it in the world. Just think about that. And if you get a chance, Dallas, Texas, go see, you know, George W. Bush's library, Boston, JFK, Ronald Reagan, Simi Valley, California, with a beautiful view. College Station, Texas, Bush 41. I mean, they're all over. Truman's, as you said, Iowa. I mean, they're close, they're far, and they're fantastic, folks. And it's going to be a great addition to North Dakota and the Theodore Roosevelt National Park. Thanks for the time, Ed. We'll talk again soon.
Good to be with you, Scott.
More coming up, folks, on What's
Are
On
you
Your
looking
Mind.
Nothing but woods and water, dropping deer from a stand, catch a fish with a bobber, drink a beer out the can, liquor out the bottle, how the good Lord intended it, yes he did. I love my country, I love my country,
strings and fiddles and speed from Kentucky. We keep it.
These are the things you need to zero in on when the headlines in the news are making you a little crazy. You know? What you love about your country.
Yeah.
Right?
Amen.
Exactly right. Exactly right. All right. So I need to tell you about the University of Mary, and we're going to chat with my next guest. My phone's ringing for some reason, but I don't know why it's ringing. It's okay. Doesn't matter. Here we go. During challenging times, oh, I know why. The laptop's open. That's weird when that happens.
Yeah.
The phone doesn't ring, but it's connected to the, like, for FaceTime.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So you got Leah in there, so.
Yeah, Leah fixed it for me. Leah's the best. Anyway, challenging times in which we live, right? You bet we do. So what do you do during challenging times? Just exactly what I was saying during the song. Remember why you love the country. Look at the blue sky. Look at the green. So green right now. Just incredible. Look around, you know? So you focus on positive things and positive actions that you can take now and how they'll affect you in the future. That's a life lesson in that sentence right there. During challenging times, focus on positive actions you can take now and how the actions will affect the future. You zero in on that one thing. Example, if you've considered going back to school to advance your education and career, now is the time to act. The University of Mary offers online bachelor's and master's degrees in a number of fields, from business to criminal justice and education to healthcare. Finish your degree or begin a new one. University of Mary knows your life and career experiences are valuable. That's why they offer credit for previous experience. Complete your degree sooner by earning credit for experience you already have. That makes total sense, too. That's how they do it at UMary. Your application fee is now waived. We have the power to waive your application fee. What's on your mind, listeners? Right there. Go online, umary.edu/discover more, and get started and use these challenging times for some good. The U.S. attorney for the great state of North Dakota is Drew Wrigley. This would be the federal law enforcement arm, an arm of the attorney general in the U.S. in the Department of Justice. And we're going to talk a little bit about a recent case, Eric Stephen Towa, and his role in the riots in downtown Fargo at the end of May. Drew Wrigley, back with us on What's on Your Mind. Hello, Drew. How are you?
Good morning, Scott. Good to be with you and your listeners.
Glad to have you back on the program. I want to ask you first for a little bit of an overview for the federal government role, for the U.S. Justice Department and its role in combating what everybody's seeing on their TV screens right now, lawlessness, a lot of lawlessness, right? Riots and, right. You know, political agendas being used to harm cops or defame cops or throw rocks at cops or provoke cops or whatever. Is there a federal role for in these incidents?
Oh, there certainly is, Scott, and just so that your listeners are aware, from the earliest hours of the riot and the disruptive activities that took place on May 30th in Fargo, and have continued around the country, the Department of Justice nationally has been very involved. I was on the phone multiple times that night with the main justice of the people in D.C. To apprise them both of what was happening in Fargo, and then also, they wanted my full assessment of sort of the state resources that were available, whether it's, the National Guard, the administration that is in place in our governor's office, the local police and sheriff and other law enforcement, what those response capabilities are. And I was, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on the air with you, I was able to obviously report that just at the highest level of professionalism and capability, we have the ability as a state to respond. A lot of what people saw that night and in these instances around the country, a lot of it predominantly, they are violations of state statute and or municipal regulation of some kind, by and large, but not always. And where appropriate, the Department of Justice is dedicated to stepping into that role. And that's what we did last week with regard to Eric Stephen Towa, who is the first defendant that we've indicted as a result of that uprising here in North Dakota.
So yeah, I remember back to the Dakota Access Pipeline protest at a time where you were lieutenant governor of the state. And it seemed to me a lot of the charges, you saw what you saw and you said, come on, what? I mean, this can't continue to happen. Yeah. And people were arrested and people were, jailed and bailed out immediately. And then the charges were, rather scattered, right? You'd had hundreds of arrests. I forget the number, but a lot less actually charged out. Is it easier for a federal charge to stick, if you will, versus, a county attorney doing that?
No. No, it's not. And law enforcement's work is very complicated in this. When I say no, in some degrees, it can sometimes be more difficult because we have an additional element. Perhaps we have to also prove not only the disruptive riotous conduct, but that it somehow impacted interstate commerce or somehow was conducted by communications across state lines or traveling for the purpose of engaging in that conduct. So there sometimes are additional elements. It really comes down to whether it's appropriate for there to be federal involvement or not. One of the things I said last week, I met with the media following Mr. Toa's initial appearance, and I pointed out that the riots themselves, the disruptive conduct, the civil disorder, has definitely been federalized. It has been nationalized all across the United States. And so what an appropriate situation for the Department of Justice to then also, to some degree, to an appropriate degree, federalize and nationalize the response. Attorney General Barr and his team in D.C. have been really masterful at engaging the United States attorney community. All across, there are 93 U.S. attorney's offices around the United States, engaging us and our leadership of federal resources all across the country, and you're seeing indictments. It takes a little longer sometimes, the charging process and the investigation process. It oftentimes involves telephones and computer communications, et cetera. But where appropriate, we're bringing those charges, not just here in North Dakota, but across the United States.
Yeah, and so when I say, is it easier to get it to stick? Your point is no, that's always tough, no matter what level it is at. Yeah. But federal law has more teeth, does it not, as far as, how many times you can pull stuff like this before you end up with a felony or the actual charges or basically some things that would be more appropriate for the actual act. Am I right there?
Yeah, by and large, I think that is true, that the sanctions are both oftentimes more apparent on the front end. We can't guarantee a sentence, but they're oftentimes somewhat enhanced from state penalties. Also, in the federal system, they serve their penalties without the possibility of parole. There's no parole in the federal system. And anybody who knows me, I've been doing this work for 16 years. It's not one of my objectives to stack human beings like Cordwood. We I don't want to say intervene. We step into this role where appropriate and where we believe that the defendant and his or her conduct merits the use of federal resources and the potential for the federal sanctions to come into place. Mr. Toa, as a result of what we allege is his conduct from the night of the 30th or the afternoon and evening of May 30th, he's facing the possibility of up to 5 years in federal prison and a $250,000 fine. And whatever sentence, if he is convicted, whatever sentence he gets, if he's incarcerated by the judge, he would serve that in a federal penitentiary versus, the Cass County Jail or out in Bismarck. There's an important deterrent effect. It's why we talk about these matters publicly. People need to understand we are through our work at the Department of Justice and here at the U.S. Attorney's Office in North Dakota, we are very energetically doing our work in a way that we hope helps preserve the right of any group, without reference to what their perspective might be. It preserves the right for people to lawfully assemble and petition their government without fear that there could be violence breaking out or that someone might come in and try to hijack what's going on.
That's a great point. That's a great point. People should be able, no matter what their beliefs, to go out there and not have to worry about it. Yeah.
Tell you, there were people in my office who have chosen not to participate in lawful expression of their First Amendment perspectives and views. They've chosen not to do that in the wake of the violence from May 30th. Individuals in the U.S. Attorney's Office who they and their family members wanted to avail themselves of one or more subsequent assemblies, but they made the decision. It was too risky. You just don't know what's going to erupt. That's not right. It's also not just the U.S. Attorney's Office. All across our communities, there would be more participation. If I'm planning a march in 5 months, pick the subject, whatever it might be. Drew Wrigley's going to lead a march in 6 months. I ought not have to calculate. I wonder if we can be supplanted. I wonder if we could be hijacked by some violent people, agitators, people to come in and do destructive, harmful, dangerous things. That shouldn't be part of the calculation. It's our role to, I said a year from now, nationwide, we'll know whether we banded together and we fought hard to protect people's right to lawfully assemble and petition their government. And it's going to take stiff-spined law enforcement to accomplish that.
Tell me quickly, I have about a minute left. Eric Stephen Toa, what do we know about his past record? Where is he from? Has he done this elsewhere?
Well, I'm not at liberty to talk about any of that, unfortunately, Scott. I just, you know, there's some, you know, he grew up out of state. He didn't grow up in North Dakota, and that's fine, right? We welcome folks from all over the country and the globe here to our communities. We have a diversifying citizenry and economy and everything else that we're excited about here in North Dakota and around this region. So that's not really the issue. But now he didn't grow up here, and I can't really go into his background and what we allege to be his conduct outside of what's been articulated in the complaint so far.
Here's what I'd like to say: if he is convicted of with what you've charged him with, and receives 5 years and a $250,000 fine, there will be a lot less people that'll do what he did here, right?
Yep. I think that's exactly right. And it really helps underscore our support of the work of law enforcement entities, like in this particular instance, most pointedly, Fargo Police and the Cass County Sheriffs. And I know that they had brothers and sisters from all over law enforcement come in and assist them. But I hope people understand how well we were served by the leadership of those organizations, by the men and women in uniform. That night, they stood out there. They were professional. They were effective. They pretty rapidly dissipated the riots and the disruption, and thankfully it was done without loss of life. There was a lot of damage to property and people were injured, and I know that they're even more prepared for the next time. I could not be more proud of our law enforcement, and we're proud to work hand in glove with them, hopefully for the right sanctions going forward. Our investigations continue. We've so far indicted or charged one defendant. There are several others who continue under investigation, and I know that's true in the state as well.
Is this individual still in jail, or is he bail? Is he
gotten in custody? Yes, he does remain in custody at this time.
Got it. All right. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate the time. Drew Wrigley, U.S. Attorney for the District of North Dakota. Our final segment coming up.
What's on your mind? Brought to you by our friends at Schwann Buick GMC. It's the July summer sale going on now at Schwann Buick GMC Cadillac. New shipments, GMC off-lease program cars are arriving every day, like the Enclaves, the Acadias, the Yukons, Silverados, Equinox, Malibus, Cruises, all of them. You name it, they have it. Some with very low miles, payments as low as $199 a month. Find the vehicle this summer to fit your lifestyle and your budget by shopping the one and only used car superstore. That's Schwann Buick GMC, where your warranty lasts a lifetime, or at SchwannBuickGMC.com.
11 before the top of the hour, our final segment already. Another one of those shows that feels like it went by in about a nanosecond. Did it? Zoom, gone. Unbelievable. Todd Mitchell, speaking of gone today and tomorrow, back on Wednesday, and we have a fun but busy week for you this week. Let's see what, tons of text here, and also Carol wanted to get a comment in about our earlier conversation with Ed O'Keefe on the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. Go ahead, Carol. What's your comment or question?
Hi. I have been to all the presidential libraries except for FDR's, and they are a fantastic thing to go visit with your family. Children of all ages can find something of interest there. And I am pushing for North Dakota to really get behind the Theodore Roosevelt one, because it will be a fun one to go visit. My favorite one was probably Nixon's, because one of the things on display was a miniature White House, and then he also had his handwritten speech telling the nation, we either landed on the moon or regret that they were not able to land on the moon and something horrific happened to them.
Oh, he'd written both of them. How interesting. Isn't his actual childhood home on the location there as well?
Yes. And Eisenhower's childhood home is at his at Abilene, Kansas.
Yeah, that's neat.
So lots of interesting things. Eisenhower's was a lot of World War II stuff.
I haven't stopped to count them all that I've been to, but I've not been to as many as you have, all but one. And you know, until I'd been to the first one ever, which I think was Ronald Reagan's in Simi Valley, California. That might have been the first. You know, I didn't, I guess, grasp this idea of what it's called. But Presidential Library doesn't really do it justice, does it, Carol?
No, the library part to me is because they hold a lot of the president's papers that they wrote or things that happened. So you can go there and do a lot of reading. At Johnson's, one of the floors was just volumes of papers that happened during his administration. And then they have a cute little part. He's standing by a wooden fence telling jokes. They had a, I'll say, a little dummy or something made up to look like him chewing on a piece of straw. Kennedy's, one of the very interesting things there was one room that you heard the beep, 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 and then it was Walter Cronkite came on, and he announced that President Kennedy had been shot. And then on another black and white TV screen, they had the beep, beep, beep come on again. And it was announcing that President Kennedy had actually died.
Wow.
So, and then they showed memorabilia from all over the world that people had sent to the family or to the nation for the death of Kennedy. And so, I mean, you go to Reagan's and you see his cowboy boots, his saddle, Nancy's beautiful purses or jewelry she was given by kings of the world. I mean, to me, they're very fascinating and have a lot of our U.S. history in them.
Yeah, they sure do. Carol, can you hang on a second? I'd love to visit more with you off the air a little bit about that, because you and I share a passion of these presidential libraries. They just are living history. They really are amazing. So just hang on a sec so we can connect, if you don't mind. Email, phone number, whatever is easiest. Daniel, if you'd take that, that'd be fantastic. The wording is peaceably assemble. All right? I think that's someone correcting our language from earlier. Peacefully. It's peaceably assembling.
Ah.
I think it means the same thing, though. Right?
Yeah.
Texture says, I love what this guy is saying right now. I'd take my horses, kids, and the family to this place he's describing and make a long weekend of it. We can homeschool, so when we get a great field trip to learn about the past and have a great family experience. Exactly. It's Medora. It's exactly right. Thank you for that. Unfortunately, do you think there will be any protesting as the library is being built? Who knows? I would think the least chance of that is in for North Dakota rather than anybody else. This coronavirus has given my wife another excuse not to kiss me. She says, not until the virus is done.
Ah.
Scott, I need a My Pillow. Send something to hold at night. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, I don't know that I can help that person. I don't know if I can. Your guest said it all. He said the presidential library will inject $250,000 per year into the North Dakota economy. The investment in the library is $150 million, so that means that then in 600 years, there will have been as much revenue into that economy to match the investment. Sounds good to me. I'm not sure that math is correct. $150 million. Now, the investment in the library actually will end up being about $250 million, but $50 million of that will be a loan from the Bank of North Dakota, the proceeds of which will do the operation. So the actual state tax expenditure is, I don't know what. I guess, what would that be? The state's $50 million, but it's right in a bank. But it, I don't know. I don't know. I can't solve that one today. Cannot. Time to get on with life. We don't need a play-by-play every minute on coronavirus anymore. I don't think we're doing that anymore, but we are talking about some of the impacts. God bless you, folks. See you tomorrow. Brian Kilmeade among our guests tomorrow.